We're going to talk about the projects, the Health and Human Service area. And I believe Commissioner Chuck Johnson from will talk, go first. Is that correct? And the two projects I think that we'll center on will be the security hospital in St. Peter, and then a program also down St. Peter, the sex offenders program. So welcome, Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm Chuck Johnson, Department of Human Services. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today to share with you our proposal for bonding on the St. Peter campus for DHS. Appreciate that this project is in the bill that was introduced by Senator Stump last week. Obviously, have a lot of work to do ahead of you, but we're here to hopefully help share what we're trying to do here and share the import of this project. Before I launch in, I just wanted, this is a very large and complex project. It extends over 3 years or three bonding cycles, a six-year cycle of $130 million. As Senator Stump said, it includes two programs, our security hospital and the sex offender program. The project is very much tied together. It involves demolition, renovation, remodeling, and new construction. So it's all kind of there in one place on the St. Peter campus. When we started talking about bonding a couple of years ago, before we introduced the proposal in 2012, we started with the notion or the concern about our bed pressure in the sex offender program. And when we started talking about it more, we decided we needed to be more strategic than to just talk about building more beds for the sex offender program. We needed to actually...
Sorry about that.
We needed to actually move in the direction of looking at our St. Peter campus and addressing two concerns, both the bed pressure in the sex offender program, but also the need to update, remodel, and make the Minnesota Security Hospital into the right kind of program and the right kind of building support the treatment we do for the people that are committed to us there.
Mr. Johnson, as you move forward, there are both men and women at the security hospital. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And also on the same campus, you have the sex offender, the kind of the final stage of the sex offenders.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. Thank you. In 2012, we did propose essentially the same proposal to bring forward this year. At that time, we had not had the opportunity to do the full pre-design and design work, and so we had a different dollar estimate on it. It was a part of the governor's proposal. We were asking at that time for $40 million for the security hospital and $1.7 million for the sex offender program. We're really trying to address three things with this proposal. The first is to address the physical building of the security hospital itself and the kind of treatment we provide in that program. That's both to address safety and security issues, and I'll talk some more about that. It's also to address the patient, the environment for patient treatment and having the right kinds of beds, the right kinds of units for the appropriate phase of treatment that people are in that we don't really have right now at St. Peter and is a challenge for us. The second thing that we're addressing is right now we have these two populations, these two programs, the Minnesota Security Hospital folks, as well as the sex offender program, on the same campus in St. Peter. And on the lower part of the campus, and I'll talk more about the physical layout of that campus, those populations are coexisting. We don't think that that's an appropriate place to be for the long term. They're very different populations. One set is vulnerable adults. One set are committed to us as predators. We need to separate, get those programs physically separated, and this proposal addresses that. And then finally, as I mentioned, we do have a bed pressure within the sex offender program based on our current projections of about 50 additional people being added a year to that program. We need to have some additional space for those folks as they come forward. And, of course, the next agenda item that you have is to talk about alternatives to just continuing to grow at 50 beds a year. That's something Commissioner Jessen will address a little bit later, which is obviously our longer-term preference to not be continuing to build beds for the program. But right now we need to have these beds at St. Peter to get us through the next few years. As I said, in this cycle, we're requesting $51 million, $46.8 million for the security hospital and $4.35 for the phase one of this of the sex offender program. That's MSOP, Minnesota Sex Offender Program, if you're trying to get through the acronyms. We were appropriated $3.68 million last year. That's what we've used for the pre-design and design work we've done to date on the security hospital piece of this. That's helped a lot in terms of really scoping the project. Because we didn't get dollars to start building, we're, of course, back now. One change from our proposal last year is that last year we were only asking for some pre-design money for the sex offender part of this request. This year we're asking for that pre-design money again, but we're also asking for $2.63 million that would allow us to do some remodeling in the Green Acres building to create 30 beds very quickly within that program. And I'll talk a little bit more about that as we go forward through the presentation. This gives you the dollar breakout over the phases of the project. As I said, this is a multi-phase project extending over three bonding cycles, two cycles for the security hospital, and then, as you can see, three cycles for the sex offender program. Part of what the phasing for the sex offender program allows us to do is to work as we go along and identify how our bed needs may be changing. So to the extent alternatives do come online and we're not getting as many people coming into that program, we would have the ability to adjust that plan in the middle if, in fact, we didn't need to build the 200 beds we're targeting in this proposal to create at the end of the cycle for the sex offender program. So we tried to really make it phased in that way so we have time to assess how are the alternatives working, what does that mean for where we are with this program going forward through 2018, and, of course, further into the future, which would also continue to be a concern if we don't do this project.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then if you're saying long-term 200 beds at the MSOP here, how does that fit with the Moose Lake facility? Would there be more here and fewer requested there, assuming that nothing changes in the program?
Mr. Chair and Senator Scalzi, we're building beds. We're proposing to build the beds in St. Peter because that is the end stage of treatment, and that's where we need to have more beds right now. The Moose Lake facility is the earlier stages of treatment. So people come into the program in Moose Lake, and then if they make progress in treatment, they move down to St. Peter and in that program. So that's part of why we're targeting putting the beds at St. Peter. Whether or not we have to go back at some point and build more beds at Moose Lake becomes an issue probably in the 2016 to 2018 time frame as to what our growth is looking like at that point and whether we've done anything to turn the curve on the growth within the program that we're experiencing now and have been for the last 10 years or so.
Thank you.
Mr. Johnson, just to kind of back up one more step, I was hoping that this committee would address tomorrow the corrections. It's a different option or a different phase or part of it, which was the St. Cloud area where all of the inmates or those that are convicted go first. And so if you could just trace obviously this isn't corrections, but if you could just trace the path of a sex offender from the time they're going to go into one of the institutions, how do they end up in St. Peter?
Mr. Chair, they start out, and most all of the sex offenders that come to us are committed to us at the time that they're coming out of the Department of Corrections. So they've been imprisoned for a crime, and at that point, and then they've served that sentence. And at that point, a determination is made, and a petition is made by the county to a court, and the court makes a decision at that point as to whether this person should be civilly committed, and that's what we do, is civil commitment, not criminal, for additional treatment to address the ongoing potential threat that they have to society in terms of their sex offense. So they come to us into the Moose Lake program. The sex offender program that we run is a treatment program, and so we provide treatment to people to try to help them make progress to the point where they can be reintegrated into the community. It is a difficult form of treatment, and it's one where there's a lot of work still being done to identify the best modalities and to find more ways to be successful. As compared to when I talk about the security hospital and mental health, we're becoming very advanced over the last number of decades in what we do in the mental health treatment, and those folks we are able to get those folks back into the community. As folks know, with the sex offender program, we moved one person to the community last year. It's the first person we had moved in a long time. after they've been at Moose Lake, if they progress through treatment to the third and fourth stages, then they would move down to St. Peter and be part of the program down there. Eventually, they can move into what's called community placement services, which is a very end stage of treatment, where they have campus privileges in St. Peter, although they still have an ankle bracelet on. They're given escorted opportunities to go out into the community, do things like that. And then eventually, we're looking to try to make community placements for those people. Similarly, very secure environment still once they move to the community, as is the individual we moved out last year. But that's eventually the path that we are looking for people to take.
And as far as the funding goes, once they have served their sentence, the counties, if they're committed through the county system, the counties continue to pay for that as a civil commitment, or how does that work?
Mr. Chair, the counties pay a 25% share, and the rest of it is state funding for the operational costs of the and treatment and so forth.
In the civil commitment?
In the civil commitment.
And what's the breakout on when they're in the correction or in the let's say under the correctional department?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure how the corrections cost break out.
Right. Okay, Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is I think a really an important area for us to take up and look at very hard, and I would urge you, Mr. Chairman, in addition to inviting Department of Human Services in to testify, that you also invite the Department of Corrections, Department of Public Safety to come in and testify. I see that we have a total of a six-year plan being proposed at over $32 million for MSOP, and I frankly would like to hear what Corrections and Public Safety would have to say about this for this specific reason. These folks coming out of prison and being civilly committed is a program that I'm around numbers was started maybe 25 years ago and was done because we simply didn't know what to do with them. The cost, as I recall, in housing these folks is about $100 a day in prison and about $300 a day in this treatment program. And it has to rank up with, and I'm not being critical of anybody because these are really difficult cases, but it has to rank right up there with one of the most unsuccessful programs that we've ever dreamed up. Because if I recall correctly, we've released one since the program started. And the number of folks who have been civilly committed over the last few years has risen dramatically. So the cost to the state of Minnesota is really a significant cost, coupled with the fact that I think the judicial branch is getting involved now saying, you folks better get your act straight and figure out what to do with this program because we can't just continually hold them under civil commitment forever. So what, and I don't know if there is any discussion within the Department of Corrections and Public Safety as to whether or not we are going to make a move away from the civil commitment and maybe into indeterminate sentencing. For a couple of reasons. Number one, it's a lot cheaper. And number two, we are not having a great deal of luck in treating these folks. So before we allocate $32 million to a program, I would really like to hear testimony from the other side of government as to what are we doing about these sex offenders in the long run, and is the Minnesota Sex Offender Program something that we are going to continue into the future? So I would simply make that request, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Newman. It is, I think, a very important decision that we make, because generally I think that you mentioned, Mr. Johnson, that the number is increasing at about 50 per year, and so it continues to grow. Senator Sharon, Senator Sharon is joining us here. I believe there was a task force that was set up, and I know we have Commissioner Jessen here to talk a little bit about that. Well, thank you for joining us. Has your committee heard the suggestions on what changes might occur in this program, or is that task force still meeting?
I think that I'll have the commissioner speak comprehensively to that, but the answer to both questions is there are recommendations that have come from a task force that has been established, and the task force is continuing to meet because they have not yet completed their work to be responsive to what the court ruled the state needed to address in its civil commitment process. But Commissioner, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it really was focusing specifically what we've been focusing on in the task force and in the legislation that we're putting together to be responsive to the court is the civil commitment process and what happens in order to allow people progression through a treatment process. Our work has not been focused on what the question, you know, about whether or not there'd be indeterminate sentencing or that kind of question. That's not in the scope of work that we've been working on.
Okay. Welcome, Commissioner. Maybe you can help enlighten us.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Ascinda Jessen. I'm Commissioner of the Department of Human Services. And I know you all are waiting with bated breath to get back to the rest of Chuck Johnson's presentation, but let me answer the questions about the task force. And I think it will make it clear as we kind of lay out our plan for the St. Peter campus, you know, phase one really focusing on security hospital and the mentally ill and dangerous patients. But then because we don't know what will happen with our sex offender program, we have to make plans kind of that gives us the flexibility to plan one way or the other. So as far as the task force, I think it's important to kind of get look at the backdrop, and I appreciate some of Senator Newman's comments. This has been a program that has been much studied and much criticized. I think there's been was a study by the by Governor Pawlenty's task force back in about almost 10 years ago. Then the legislative auditor did a review, and the department has also done a review making suggestions, many of them very similar in nature. But I think the current task force came to be because a number of those changes that were recommended weren't made by the legislature. Some were made by the department, but we ended up with litigation, kind of class action litigation, in the federal courts with a number of people challenging the constitutionality of the program. I want to be very clear, the department, through the Attorney General's office, is defending that litigation vigorously, maintaining the constitutionality of the program, but the court has appointed counsel for this very experienced counsel to represent these individuals. So it is a case the court is taking very seriously. This is a federal judge, Judge Donovan Frank. And Judge, as part of this case, he directed through the magistrate judge that he directed me as commissioner to put together a task force, which he then named. So this is a task force named by the federal judge. And he gave that task force very specific areas to come back make recommendations about. And I'll just kind of outline what the areas are and then what the recommendations have been that I've seen from the task force to date. The task force is chaired by former Chief Justice Eric Magnuson. The vice chair is former Chief Judge of the Federal District Court, Jim Rosenbaum. And we have a bipartisan group of legislators who serve on it, as well as many judges, treatment providers, and some a really good a group of experts. So the federal judge said to them, I want you to come back and give the legislature, really all of you, and me as commissioner, proposals on three topics. And the first topic was the civil commitment referral process. So how do people get into the system? How is that working? What changes should be made? And the second area was civil commitment options that are less restrictive than placement in a secure treatment facility. So different options. And right now, when judges are making a decision whether to commit, they only have one choice. Either you don't commit that person who's come out of prison, who's been referred by DOC, you don't commit them, and then they're free. Or you commit them to MSOPs in Moose Lake facility. And so I think that the judge was saying to the task force, look at more of a continuum to give judges more choices. And then the third thing the judge said to look at was the standards and processes for reduction in for custody. So kind of the back end. How should people be leaving the system and under what conditions and should there be changes? So the full task force report is due in December of this year. But what the judge ordered the task force to do was said for that middle one, giving advice on creating options for the judge for the judge when they're committing these individuals, options other than just Moose Lake, we want you to make that recommendation first. And so the judge, the task force made that recommendation in December of this year and recommended that the legislature provide funding and direction for these optional residential facilities, whether they're group homes or outplacement facilities or treatment programs, and directed and suggested that as commissioner, I request proposals from governmental and other providers to find out what they would be willing to do to provide these options. So we have that recommendation. It's detailed, but it's basically we suggest you create other options so that judges have more than one choice to make when they're making that commitment decision. At the department, we've issued an RFI. We've gotten a lot of feedback from both public and private providers who've expressed a willingness to provide secure treatment, but secure treatment outside of Moose Lake, so that if a judge made a decision to commit someone, they could still be civilly committed as a sex offender, but committed to a program that that was outside of Moose Lake. And so that is where we are. I would just say, if I might, Mr. Chair, I'm really glad Senator Sharon is here. She has proposed legislation, and it's been through several committees, which both looks at the coming up with additional options, secure treatment, but secure treatment outside of Moose Lake is an option, and also for regular evaluations of the people in our sex offender treatment program.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. That is very helpful. We have some questions. The one thing that I think would be helpful for this committee would be in light of the recommendations that will come in December, if you look at what we currently have in terms of St. Peter and Moose Lake, realizing that you said that you have kind of taken into account some alternatives, even if they change, how does that affect us and what we do in terms of funding projects?
Mr. Chair, I'll be happy to answer that in a bit, and I think Mr. Johnson and the rest of his presentation will go into that in a little more detail. But that is why we really switched our approach at the department 2 years ago. Instead of just saying, let's build, 200, 400 more sex offender treatment beds, we have this great need to have better treatment for people who are committed as mentally ill and dangerous. And if we really spend the money and the time on the security hospital, that frees up some additional places security hospital used to be, which will provide us with facilities that if we need them, we can then, turn them into beds for our sex offender treatment program, which would really be more something that we wouldn't be looking for in phase one but more as a phase two or three. So it really gives us the flexibility to see what decisions the legislature does make regarding our sex offender treatment program. But if we just do nothing, we're concerned that if we don't at least prepare for the future with those additional 50 to 55 people coming every year, we could end up in a situation in 2 or 3 years if we don't take some initial steps now that we don't have a place for them. And that certainly is not something we want, Mr. Chair. But Mr. Johnson, I think, has more details on that.
We're going to take a couple questions. Senator Hayden had a question, and then Senator Newman.
Well, good. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll be brief because I know we have to get through this. I was just getting a little confused because I know that it looked like this proposal was for the St. Peter Regional Treatment Center, which in the file has houses mentally ill and dangerous and those committed in the in the MSOP, if you will. So I was just trying to figure out. So you were talking about Moose Lake a lot, and that's kind of primarily where folks are at. So I was trying to get the difference between the proposal that we have in front of us, which primarily houses people who are mentally ill and dangerous, and those in the sex offender treatment program. And then I was thinking about Senator Newman and his track, and then also Commissioner, when you talked about the options that are less restrictive, so dealing with folks in the community. And so the two of those, taking more people, either longer sentences or other options that aren't in the treatment program, in the LOC facility, that actually brings more people out. So I guess what I'm trying to figure out is this capital project really to address the needs of the folks that would be civilly committed at the MSOP and all of the litigation around it, or are you asking us to really look at a renovation of the existing state hospital? They have their own set of issues, which we haven't even begun to talk about, and the work that you're doing there to correct those, or are we talking both? I just couldn't figure out what we were.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hayden, I probably may have dived in too quickly to the details. Let me just step back for a moment. This project is primarily, almost all, about renovation of Security Hospital so that we have better treatment and a safer facility for our employees. That's a hospital that where our mentally ill and dangerous clients are, where we treat them. And part of the rationale of that, as Mr. Johnson said earlier, is right now on our lower campus in St. Peter, we're mixing vulnerable adults who are mentally ill and our sex offender population who are predators. So by really renovating and moving it to the top part of the campus for our mentally ill and dangerous population, and one of the things that does, in addition to providing better treatment facilities for our mentally ill and dangerous, it frees up some buildings which used to house our mentally ill patients. And those are buildings that then later, if we need to, if we don't look at some of these other options that are being considered, then we will have those buildings available to renovate for our sex offender treatment program if things like Senator Sharon's bill don't pass. I think we just need, so it gives us the flexibility in the future if we have to use it, but the primary dollars here are all about better treatment and a safer environment for those who live and work in Security Hospital.
Thank you.
Senator Newman, and then Senator Kiffmeyer, and then we'll move on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Commissioner Jessen, this question, I think, does go towards ultimately the jurisdiction of this committee in terms of how much money are we going to spend at St. Peter. And my question is, when Judge Frank set up this task force, if we go to the second provision, he was looking for options. Was he asking that the task force look into treatment options, or was he looking for all options, including options that would be available to judges at the time of sentencing, which would include longer prison sentences?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Senator Newman. My understanding of the judge's order was that it would be looking at other alternatives for programs and facility throughout the state to serve the sex offender, the people committed to the sex offender program.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Newman.
Treatment options.
Well, I think that.
Commissioner.
Sorry. Mr. Chair, Senator Newman. It was options that would be secure facilities that would include treatment, but it's not just about treatment. I mean, it's also about the security, and at first directed the task force to look at secure residential facilities.
Mr. Chairman, and this would involve options for those who have been committed to the Minnesota State Sex Offender Program.
Mr. Chair, Senator Newman, that is my understanding and my reading of the judge's order.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thanks. Senator Kiffmeyer, and then Senator. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner. I'm glad to see the separation approach. I think that's just a really, really important area. So I think there's a lot of good things there. Back to the MSOP clients, one of the things was, we had talked about this before, was, and it touches on the Department of Corrections, that trying to get upstream in the treatment process, we understand not getting up even higher before that, but at least in the Department of Corrections. Is that something that is being done currently to kind of help alleviate some of this pressure down into the Moose Lake or St. Peter?
I'm not sure I understood the question. Did you, Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Senator Kiffmeyer, I think that that is a really good question about what more can we do to get upstream, what more can we do in our correction system. You know, certainly, you know, I am an advocate for doing more sex offender treatment in the prison system and having the funding. I think that helps us all. Just what the proposals are right now for that, I'm not as familiar with just in my job at Human Services. But I certainly... to me, kind of your question also, and actually Senator Newman's as well, you know, get at the need to look at this more broadly, which is, I think, one of the reasons why we at the department think having the flexibility built in that this proposal does, so that we're not locked into necessarily building exactly the number of beds or the types of beds, but having the ability to move quickly if we have to is so important, because it would be good to look more holistically at what to do with this population.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that is exactly it. Having served on HHS for, let's see, it's going on 5 years now. So I think that is one of the issues, and mainly because financially, too, the Department of Corrections is a lot cheaper housing situation, and not waiting for them to get into some of these treatment things by going into the $300 a day. You know, the question is, can we? But we look at this on a separate level. You have the MSOP program, and you have the Department of Human, you have the security hospital, and then you bring in somebody from DOC, and you're bifurcating, you're separating out, whereas many times these clients or these folks in this situation, that's not the case. You know, it's a continuum of what they do, and I think it's important for us. We have an opportunity here to take a look at it, but I think right now the things that are in front of us in the Department of Corrections and the MSOP DHS program, we have a chance to take a look at that, irrespective of a task force, and consider some of that. Some of these things are not housing. Some of these are funding dollars of treatment within the Department of Corrections, because you might keep some of those folks from not having to go into Moose Lake. I mean, wouldn't that be even better? Better for them and better for everything. So with dollars that we have, and since Senator Sharon is here on this committee and chairs the health policy and serves on finance, I think we have a unique situation where we can kind of maybe try and help out a little bit more and tie some of that together, though we may not have that authority in a bonding capital investment committee to make those decisions. But certainly it's a valid discussion, and I don't know where else we're going to have it sometimes. I think the task force may do it, but they're very focused on just the civil commitment piece. And therefore, that's why my question, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, I didn't want to launch into too much of a description, not knowing, but I think the commissioner understood. Thank you.
Senator Kiffmeyer, I think you're absolutely right. This morning in finance, we had a discussion that hinged around the some of the programs that are offered through the corrections department and the chemical dependency kinds of programs. And so they are kind of, you know, intertwined, and it's hard to... It's hard to know exactly the role that we'll play in. I mean, we'd like to make the right decision in terms of facilities and the future, because it gets to be relatively expensive if you take the wrong approach.
Mm-hmm. So, Senator
Chairman. Senator Benson.
You talk about the future, but I might be the only one that's missing something here, and I don't serve on the HHS, and I never have, but the discussion seems to revolve around other alternatives, other options, waiting for a report. And then the other flip of the coin, the way I see it, is we're going to try and appropriate $46.8 million from this committee without, and I'm a novice in this HHS thing, and maybe somebody could, I mean, it seems to me you're putting the cart before the horse, or somebody is, that you don't know these alternatives, you don't know these options. You're waiting for a report, but we're appropriating $46 million before we have the roadmap. That's my opinion. No. Guys, it's...
Okay, that turns
maybe,
us,
and I might need some help on this one.
That turns us back. Thank you, Senator Metzen. That kind of turns us back to Mr. Johnson to kind of give us the explanation of why this is the appropriate recommendation that we should fulfill.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to make it clear that I think we need to do things in this area, but I'm just the timing is my concern.
Sure. Okay. Senator Sharon?
I would just like to add to the confusion.
I might be the only one confused.
Let me add to the clarification. The conversation, remember this, there's two, the thing that may be confusing in the proposal is that at the St. Peter campus, as opposed to the Moose Lake campus, there are two different distinct facilities, one that serves the mentally ill and dangerous. And the proposal that is here, and if you were not made available to the recent auditor's report about state-operated services, you will see there's a significant number of concerns about problems that are existing for our employees and for our patients in state-operated services. This proposal deals with that. It separates and changes the risk factors for employees and for the patients who are sexual or who are not the sexual offenders but the mentally ill and dangerous, and moves them up from a lower campus to an upper campus because of these investments that are going to be made. You must, in your mind, clearly understand that's a separate conversation from the sex offender program. And what will be described here is that there will be opportunities because we move that population through these improvements to the Upper Hill for opportunities for the future growth in the sex offenders program. But they're separate. They're separate. They're budgeted separately. They're operated separately. Then the second thing is that that there are sex offender treatment programs in the correction system right now in the range of 200 beds. The thing I would remind you about, the civil commitment, as opposed to in corrections, it's voluntary. And a lot of what we're dealing with is even after completion of that the person may not be considered safe for the public. They're coming out of corrections having been in the sex offenders program there. Or they may have refused to participate in a sex offenders treatment program or a CD treatment program that's all out in the courts. And you get to the end of that time, and somebody does an evaluation to determine whether or not they're safe to be released to the public. And that's the point, whether they've been in the state's correction system treatment program or refused to participate in it, that somebody makes a determination. And that's where the civil commitment begins. No matter what we do to expand the opportunities in the correction system, we will still get to this junction. There still will be a question of whether or not people are safe. These are psychopathic personalities. That's why they are not necessarily very receptive to or impacted by treatment. It's different than a mental illness diagnosis. Personality disorders and mental illness are completely different things and have different impacts in terms of intervention. And they have to be determined before release as to whether they've been in a treatment program, a CD or sex offenders program, whether they have been willing to participate or not, if they are safe at that point. That's when the civil commitment begins. We will still be confronted with that population, and the court has indicated to us that we need to, we cannot use the civil commitment process to continue to extend somebody's punitive time, anticipating that they're going to commit a crime. Once they've done their time for their crime, they should be released, except for a civil commitment where you can intervene if you think someone's dangerous to the public. But you can't. But then there has to be a real process going on that demonstrates clearly to the court that we're allowing a progression, a potential for progression. Otherwise, all we're doing is extending their incarceration time, and that's where the issue is. So all of this sex offender stuff plays into the decision here, but I want you to listen closely to understand that we have a completely different system called the security hospital for the mentally ill and dangerous, separate population, that we've been hearing time after time after time for several years about critical problems around safety, around ability for the staff to see where patients are, be able to make sure that they're safe and that staff are safe. And part of these recommendations are to address those concerns. It's not the sex offenders, it's the mentally ill and dangerous.
Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator Sharon. I think we should get back to testimony. But
if I may just address what – thank you for your indulgence, Mr. Chairman. And I agree with everything that Senator Sharon stated, with this exception. I think the Department of Corrections and Department of Safety have got to be involved in this decision because it potentially will impact how much money we spend out of this committee, because those two areas have the potential of changing the rate or the number of sex offenders coming into the program, which currently is at a rate of around 50. I think I heard the number. And if sentencing guidelines were to change, that potentially would reduce the number of sex offenders that would come into the program in the future, hence would possibly impact how much money we spend out of this $32 million on the Minnesota Sex Offender Program at St. Peter. So I think it's all tied together, and I truly do not know what ultimately the criminal justice system will do in the future with respect to this population of sex offenders.
Okay. Chairman, I just want to make it clear that I'm not arguing against anything here, and I know the need is there. And it sounds like we can build the buildings and put the pieces together a little later on. Is that correct? Does that make sense? That we should go ahead with this, even though there's a few reports we're looking for, and I guess the reports we know we're going to need two separate, right? So, okay, I'm convinced that we have to. But.
We'll go on. I think the reality is that, there, even with the current number of people that are in the system, we still need to do something with the facilities. And Mr. Johnson.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. So to get at some of the questions that have just been talked about and the clarification that Senator Sharon so helpfully made, if you're looking at this slide, which is number 4 in your packet, it shows the dollars for the two pieces of the project. And the 46.8 number that Senator Menson mentioned is that's actually for the security hospital part of the project, which is a different project than the one we're talking about, Commissioner Jessen was talking about, in terms of the work that we're doing on identifying what the future need is. The second line of this that shows MSOP St. Peter, that's the Minnesota Sex Offender Program St. Peter, that's the line that addresses the issue the task force is looking at with the sex offender program and looking at alternatives. And as you see, we've paced that out over three phases of bonding to give us the flexibility to look at how is the program changing, how has the law changed, how might the numbers change in the sense of how many beds we need in St. Peter, to give us that ability to adjust based on what we see the need at the time that we're coming back to the legislature again and looking for that next phase of funding. In the first phase, what we're asking for this year, the $4.35 million, 1.7 of that is for the pre-design and design for those future phases. The other 2.63 is to do some remodeling in the Green Acres building, which will allow us to be at 30 beds online immediately, and we do believe that that's an immediate need. And I think that part of the issue of sort of what do we do now and how long do we wait, it goes down to a couple of things. One, we want to not have 55 people coming to this program every year, and we want there to be solutions that will help to move that in a different direction. But we also understand that we have a responsibility to be ready for what the current law is going to bring our way and how quickly that curve can be turned such that that number is reduced and such that the need for beds in the future is reduced. And so we're trying to be as responsible as we can be, not going up to Moose Lake and building another 400-bed building, but we are planning for 200 beds in St. Peter based on this plan over the three phases to get us in a position where we think, based on our current needs, that would get us through 2018 in terms of the bed needs. If we're able to turn that curve, we may not need all those beds. If we're able to turn that curve to a point where we don't need to ever build any more beds and we can manage within this Moose Lake and St. Peter that we have going forward, that might be an okay place to be. But right now we don't know that, and so we're trying to be responsible to build for what we understand the need is now, and also to understand the construction timelines. I mean, obviously it takes a while to move these things through, and you can't wait and decide at the last minute you're going to throw up 200 beds without having the ability to go through this process, to do the design work and so forth to do that. So that's how we're trying to phase the sex offender piece of this. And this next slide really gets at exactly what Senator Sharon was describing for you very well. As I mentioned at the beginning, as you mentioned, Senator Stumpf, at the beginning, there are two different programs on this campus, the Minnesota Security Hospital, the Minnesota Sex Offender Program, two very different populations. The population, the mentally ill and dangerous, are civilly committed to us under that title, mentally ill and dangerous, to the Minnesota Security Hospital. And that's where those folks come in, and that's where we treat them and care for them. The average length of stay in that program is about 8 years. We do have constant flow of people going in and out. Unlike the sex offender program, where, as we talked about a couple times, we've only seen the one person leave in the last decade. Very different kind of program in that sense. And as Senator Sharon said, this partly has to do with mental health treatment is far more advanced than is the kind of treatment for the psychopathic personalities in the sex offender program, such that we have the tools to help people stabilize, to get them in a position where they can move back in the community, with an ability to put supports around them in the community so they can live in the community even and manage their mental illness with some help from others. Be employed. You can do a lot with folks who are mentally ill. For the folks in the sex offender program, they're committed to us as psychopathic personalities, and it's a much different kind of population. And one of the things we're trying to address, as we'll look at a couple of graphics that show this, is to separate those two populations that right now are together on the lower part of the campus in the same physical space. We don't believe that's the appropriate place to be for the long term. The people committed to us as mentally ill and dangerous are classified under Minnesota law as vulnerable adults. The people that are committed to us in the sex offender program are classified as sexual psychopaths. That's not a combination that we want to be trying to manage going into the future. This is a map of the campus. The blue building, that large building you can kind of see that's toward the middle and the upper left, that is the existing security hospital building. That's on the top of the hill. You see that cluster of buildings that down are kind of to the lower to the right that are in blue and yellowish, I guess, and red. That's the lower campus. In between there is the bluff of the Minnesota River. If you look down the right-hand corner of the slide, you see the Minnesota River going through there on Highway 169, drive that a lot of folks are familiar with. That's where the St. Peter campus sits. There's a physical separation by the bluff between those two parts of the campus that really creates an opportunity for us to separate these two programs and separate these two populations. The blue-coated buildings on this slide are buildings that are currently housing or being used for folks within the Minnesota Security Hospital program. The people who are committed to us as mentally ill and dangerous. Obviously, the big building on the top of the hill, where we have a lot of the acute patients. And then on the lower part of the campus, you'll see a number of buildings that are listed as blue. Some of them are central, like a recreation building. But a couple of them are actually housing people in the Bartlett Hall and in Sunrise. And those are folks who are in transition services in the Minnesota Security Hospital program. You'll also see red-coated buildings on this slide, and those are the buildings that are currently in use by the sex offender program. The two buildings, Shantz and Pexton, that kind of have the same design with those wings sticking out, those are within a secure perimeter. Green Acres is not. Green Acres is currently housing some of the people in the sex offender program who are in the community placement services. That's the end stage of treatment, the people who have some campus privileges, as I mentioned earlier. It's Green Acres where we want to, with the first bonding, with the 2.63 from the bonding request this year, do some remodeling of one wing to create 30 beds for more of those folks that are at the latter stage of treatment. This building is not inside the secure perimeter, but it is a building that we can lock and have secured. It's not a completely open building. So the eventual plan, when we get to the end of the first two phases, actually, is to have all of the blue on the top of the hill and have only red on the bottom of the hill, along with some shared buildings that would continue to be used by both programs on the lower campus that are the ones that are now coded in the yellow-tan color. That's what we're trying to move toward, and we have some graphics that kind of show what that looks like as we move through the slide presentation. Mr. Chair, the next couple of slides just give you an idea of what we're doing with the security hospital. So we're focusing now on the security hospital part of this request that focuses on the population we're serving of the mentally and dangerous patients. We're really focused in phase one on this project on the most acute patients and trying to address their needs and address some of the needs that really affect the quality of treatment that we're able to provide and the treatment environment for those patients. Phase one, as you can see here, has a number of things a number of items that we get at the end of that phase. A four-bed secure evaluation unit. This is a unit that we would move folks into when they're first committed to us, and it's really to allow us to do an evaluation to keep them separated from the general population until we're able to stabilize them, first of all, usually using medication or other means, and also figure out kind of what their current situation is, what their illness is, and where they might best be placed within the program at that point. We don't have that now, and we really feel like we need to have a place to segregate those folks when they're first coming in. This would also involve a 12-bed crisis unit. Very similar kind of situation where when you have folks that go into crisis, they may be living in even the transition program, certainly within the acute, within the general population, they go into crisis. It's best to be able to have another place to move those folks to so that crisis isn't affecting the other patients and their care and their progress in treatment. This would also involve a new 40-bed housing unit for acute patients. This gets into part of the staging that we're doing of the projects to try to build some new beds. So we have places to move people to once we start renovating some of the existing spaces. So it's all with kind of the jigsaw puzzle of how we do this in two phases of moving the people around within the programs and across the programs in order to assure that we are able to make the progress that we need across the two pieces. 24-bed transition unit. Currently, as I mentioned, all the transition patients are on that lower campus. This would start to build the transition housing up on the upper campus, so we would have, again, everyone who's in the security hospital part of the program on the upper campus and not on the lower campus, and also begins to free up some of that space on the lower campus, in Bartlett Hall in particular, if you go back to this slide, in Bartlett Hall, to allow us to start renovating that space for the Minnesota Sex Offender Program. So it's, again, some of that staging of how we put the pieces together for this. And this also involves, and this is part of separating the programs, on the upper campus, a new social center, vocational building, central plant, and a small administrative office. Right now we don't have a place for the administrators to be in the security hospital, so they're on the lower campus, our executive director and the clinical leadership. They need to be in the hospital where the patients are and where the treatment is happening, and so we think that's an important piece of this project.
Are the staff the same for the security hospital as they are for the sex offender treatment?
Mr. Chair, I could get you, it depends on what detail you want to go into. I could get folks up here to go further. There are some similarities, certainly all DHS employees, and there are security staff who have similar kinds of roles, but there are different kinds of treatment, and so different specialties within the treatment staff across the two programs.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, this next slide shows phase two. I won't spend as much time on that. I'm going to show you a graphic in a second that makes that a little bit clearer. This is phase two, which we come back for under our plan 2014 to ask for the funding for phase two of the security hospital. It really starts to finish up a number of the pieces, and this is where we really get into the remodeling and renovation of the existing building on the upper campus, that big security hospital building. And also the addition of 72 new beds for transition housing so we can get all of those folks who are on the lower campus in the security hospital program up to the upper campus and then fully have that lower campus devoted to the sex offender program. And I'll show you this graphic, which kind of summarizes what I just shared on these last two slides and gives you a sense of a picture. So this is the upper campus. This is the upper campus of the St. Peter, and the parts that are showing here in the yellow and green and that kind of whitish point, that's the existing building. And that's the piece where we're going to get dig more into that in phase two. With the green area, we're actually doing some demolition and then going to rebuild those areas. The yellow area is a lot of where we're doing some remodeling and renovation of the space that's there now. The bluish-gray are the areas that I just talked about in phase one. So these are the pieces that we're actually building in phase one, and a lot of that is new construction. You can see if you just go down the list on the left-hand side there, the 12-bed crisis unit, the 4-bed evaluation unit, the 40-bed acute unit, central plant. You can see this building that's kind of off to the side that has this four-prong E-shaped that's partly in the blue and partly in the red. That's the transition housing. That's for the folks that are later end stages of treatment. We're getting them used to living more like they're going to be in the community. So those are more community kind of looking beds, like almost like an apartment. And you can see a lot of that would be built in phase two in the red. And then the additional buildings that I mentioned, the vocational and social and so forth, that are part of the phase one of the project. So when completed, all of this would encompass the programming that we need for the security hospital, evaluation unit, the crisis beds, the acute beds that we need, and then in addition, the transition beds for people that are at later stages of treatment. Here's why we want to do this. This is a picture of a living unit within the existing Minnesota Security Hospital. It's kind of a cross between a prison and a treatment facility in the way it appears just when you walk into it for those that haven't been there. What is particularly concerning for us, both from a treatment perspective and from a staff safety perspective, is these narrow hallways, the blind corners, the narrow stairways, the inability to see where people are and what they're doing, both for staff safety but also for patient safety. And for the patients to feel comfortable in the environment, that they know who's around the next corner and don't have to fear whether there's somebody there who might feel like a threat to them. And to give you a comparison, this is our Anoka facility. This is also a state-owned, state-operated facility in Anoka, the regional treatment center there. This is what a modern, secure and treatment environment should look like. You can see wide hallways, well-lit. The nurse's station has a good view both of the common areas and looking down the halls toward the patient living areas, an ability to really see what's going on at all times. And another example, this is a clinic that a facility that our staff visited in South Dakota that was built by Avera. Again, open. You can see that the staff have the ability to be able to see what's going on in common areas, the ability to watch the living areas. It's both better in terms of the security and the staff, but it's also better in terms of the patient comfort, that they're in an environment where they're going to be successful in the treatment and not where they're feeling like they have to be concerned about what's around the next corner. Mr. Chair, I've already talked about this, but this gives you really the graphic of the mixture of the populations on the lower campus. So this is a close-up graphic of the lower campus buildings. The red buildings, I think we reversed our colors. The red buildings here are the security hospital patients, and the blue ones are the sex offender program. And you can see the two areas where we have transition patients living right now in these red buildings for the security hospital, Johnson Hall and Bartlett Hall, on our opposite sides of the campus, and in between them is the sex offender program. And so when they're, and these are all folks that have campus privileges, and so when they're out moving around the campus, they're having to deal with the fact that the sex offender program is there. And in the Green Acres building, which is coded blue, which is a Minnesota sex offender program building, we also have people, clients, who have campus privileges. So we have folks moving around on the campus in these two different populations. We just don't believe it's where we want to be in the future. This proposal allows us to get those folks in the red buildings on the top of the hill where they can be with the other folks in the security hospital program, and then reuse Bartlett and Sunrise in particular for the Minnesota Sex Offender Program to meet the bed needs that we have going forward in that program, with the flexibility to be adjustable on that depending on what happens with law around commitments in that program. Johnson Hall in this graphic is actually a building that we would likely not reuse and would end up being demolished. It's an old building that is hard to figure how to use with any of our existing needs.
Mr. Johnson, is Johnson Hall the one that was kind of a sex offender transition housing, or is that the Halverson House?
I believe that that is Halverson, but I think it's actually security hospital, not sex offender.
It was a sex offender.
Halverson was used for sex offenders. That was corrected. Oh, it's blue. Yes. So you reverse the colors. Mr. Chair, I'm not going to go through these next three slides in great detail, but I'm certainly happy to answer any questions on them. There's a couple of things that I think you want to draw from this. What these show are the current distribution of beds within the security hospital program. And the next slide is where they are after phase one, and the last slide is where they are in the end after phase two. And just to sort of address the end, the one point that I want to make on this is that we are not, as you can see by comparing the totals, looking to expand the number of beds in the security hospital program. We believe that we have the right number of beds that to meet the need that's there. In fact, we would like to be moving people through this program more quickly in the future and not need as many beds, but we want to have the ability to meet the need that's there and to house the folks that we have. So this is not being driven by bed pressure. This is really being driven by what we just looked at. Two things: the nature of the facility and the challenge that it presents in terms of security, safety for our staff and for our patients, the treatment environment for patients, and the need to separate the populations, the two programs, so that we have the sex offender in the lower part of the campus and the security hospital in the upper part of the campus. That's really what we're accomplishing with this, not building new beds. But it is building the right kind of beds, too, and the right distribution, so we have the right number that are in transition. We're particularly expanding in this our competency restoration program beds. It's labeled CRP on these slides. That's a program when someone commits a crime and a court wants to get a judgment on whether or not they get them to a point where they can stand trial. They're sent to this program to go through a process where we do some evaluations, work with them to try to get them to a point where they can come in to go on trial for their crime and understand what's going on in the court, and we can certify that that is okay so that the person can then stand trial for the crime. And so there are pieces where we're making some adjustments within this to try to address where we think the most pressing needs are going forward. Okay. Mr. Chair, turning to the sex offender program, phase one of this program, as I mentioned a couple of times now, there's sort of two pieces to this request of the $4.35 million. $1.72 is for the design and pre-design. That will eventually have us looking at the remodeling of Bartlett, Tomlinson, Sunrise, and Green Acres buildings. So those are all those lower campus buildings. Bartlett for housing, Bartlett and Sunrise for housing. Tomlinson, I believe, is for some recreational and social center kind of programming. The 2.63, which is new from last year's request that we added, this is, as I mentioned a couple of times now, for the remodeling in the Green Acres, that wing to create the 30 beds that, since we went through this last year and having had a delay in getting the project started, we want to bring those beds on more quickly, and Green Acres is a place where we can do that relatively quickly and create those additional 30 beds. I can show you those buildings if you want to see them again. Oops. So Bartlett would end up being housing 144 beds for the sex offender program. Green Acres, which is down here in the blue, is currently a sex offender program, but we want to remodel one of the wings to make it into a living space of 30 beds for folks. And then in addition, we do some work in Sunrise, which will provide some additional beds. And then Tomlinson, you can see, is kind of in the center, coated in green. That would be some of the shared space for the sex offender program. Of course, as I mentioned and we talked about, a big part of the sex offender program request is phases two and three. We're requesting, we're at this point planning that in 2014 we would come back for $18 million and then in 2016 for $10 million, which would complete the renovation proposed for Bartlett, Sunrise, Green Acres, and Tomlinson. Basically, what we're going to do is essentially remodel half of Bartlett Hall while people are still living in the other half, and then move people when we get it remodeled, and then remodel the other half, and then move people in there to get ourselves to the full complement of beds in Bartlett, which is where most of the beds will end up. So as you can see here, this is Bartlett, as I mentioned, is 144 beds for residential and treatment facilities for the sex offender program. The east and west wings of Sunrise will also be for 40 or 48 residents. This is an assisted living level of care. We do have some folks within the program who need additional kind of care because they are getting older, have disabilities or other kinds of issues, who've been with us for a while in some cases. And so this is really to provide that level of care as well for those folks that are in the program. And then, as I mentioned, some more remodeling on Green Acres in the second phase. And Tomlinson is the client recreation fitness social center, the kind of central services or central gathering place programming for the sex offender program. So, Mr. Chair, we already talked a little bit about this, but right now, by our projections, we'll be out of beds in the Minnesota Sex Offender Program in the spring of 2015. This is partly why we wanted to move the piece for Green Acres so quickly, is to help a little bit with that pressure in the short term. If we follow through with all, if the population continues to come to us at the rate it has been, and if we complete all three phases of the sex offender part of the program, we will then get ourselves to be solid on the number of beds that we need through 2018. And again, if the curve hasn't turned on the number of people that are coming to us, we would then again be looking at a bed pressure in 2018 that would need to be solved in some way, whether it's Moose Lake or St. Peter or a third way. We are hoping that that's not going to be the case, and that's what we're planning on with the work that's being done in Senator Sharon's bill and within the task force.
Someone is civilly committed, they go to Moose Lake and then they come to St. Peter, a second stage. But when they come to St. Peter, do they automatically go into the secured area, or is it because is it some other reason that is the decision is made where they go?
The only Mr. Chair, the only folks in the sex offender program that are not in the secured area are the people that are in the community placement services, which is the very end stage of treatment. And I'm going to say we have 10 people currently in that program. So the Pexton and Shantz Hall that I mentioned before. Oops. You can see there's sort of a pink line around those two buildings. They're inside a secure perimeter. And so that's when folks come down from Moose Lake and come to St. Peter. They're usually starting out in Pexton or Shantz, where they're still in a secure environment. It's only the people that are now in Green Acres, where we have about the 10 folks that are in community placement services, that have some campus privileges, again, with an ankle bracelet. If they're in the community, they're being escorted. It's still a pretty secure environment, even though they have some privileges, others don't.
So Bartlett Hall, after it's remodeled, will be a transition facility, not a secured facility.
No, Mr. Chair, Bartlett Hall will be secure.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. So that'll be part of the secure, and Green Acres will continue to be the place where we would have the less secure in the sense of not being inside razor wire, but still a building that can be locked and is a very secure building.
And the clinic, Sunrise, is there like a duplication of a clinic for, I assume, healthcare purposes? Mm-hmm. Do the sex offender patients use the clinic currently, or do they go up to the hospital for clinic services?
Mr. Chair, I think I'm going to ask Nancy Johnston to come up and answer that question. Nancy is Executive Director of the Sex Offender Program.
Good afternoon. Welcome. Currently, the sex offender population does not utilize the Sunrise Clinic. That is for the mentally ill and dangerous population. We have health services in our buildings within Pexton and Shantz and nursing staff, and we have an x-ray lab, et cetera. We have what we need inside Pexton and Shantz currently. For the long-term plan, if we were to occupy the Sunrise Building with our assisted living clientele, then we would use that clinic that would be available to us in that building.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I point out one of the things that does happen to a degree with separating the two programs is that there are some services that then have to be on both the upper and the lower campus in order to keep the population separated. And that is so, as Ms. Johnston pointed out, Sunrise Building would eventually be where we'd have those clinic services on the lower campus, and there would have to be, obviously, health treatment services on the upper campus as well.
Okay. Mr. Chair. Senator Sundrum.
Mr. Chair, I just have a question which is probably more curiosity than pertinent, although slightly pertinent. Do you know what the operational cost of what I'm looking at up there on an annual basis might be? You know, for instance, does it take $100 million to run that space up there at this point? And then my second question will be, as we would do these projects, will it affect the operational cost? I would suspect that with cameras and some slight reduction, I would hope, just based on technology and landscape within the building in terms of sight lines and maybe a little less security or something.
Mr. Chair.
Could you give your name for the record?
Certainly.
Please?
Nancy Johnston.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Johnston.
Mr. Chair, Senator, if you're asking about per diem,
Mr. Chair. It's sort of like operational. Does that what I'm looking at? Does that cost $100 million a year to run, or $200 million, or $50, or $30, or $20, or $1 billion, or for what?
Mr. Chair and Senator Sundrum,
Mr. Johnson,
I don't have the budget right now with me for the security hospital. I want to say that it's in the range of something over $100 million to operate the whole operation. Carol may know. About $100 million, I was right.
Is that the security hospital?
That's for the security hospital. So it would include both the buildings you see here that are red and the upper campus building. I think that some of that might be reduced in the sense of having better sight lines and so forth will reduce the need to have as much security potentially. We haven't estimated in at this point that we'll need fewer staff, but I think it's possible it will help with that because you'll be able to staff a unit more efficiently than you are now.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Sure.
You're welcome. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson, on the security hospital, you've indicated one of the two reasons that you are seeking this funding of about, almost $99 million, the way it looks, is for purposes of safety for your patients and your employees. Can you share with us some statistical information over the past decade as to the number of attacks or crimes or injuries or what may have occurred at the hospital that would justify the need for that kind of money?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask Carol Olson to come up. Carol is Executive Director of the Security Hospital.
Welcome, Ms. Olson.
Yes. In calendar year 2012, we had approximately 190 injuries that occurred on our campus. Of those, about 50% of them, so right around 100, were injuries that required staff to be off work, accumulated workers' comp costs.
Senator Newman?
And when you say injuries that occurred, is that 190 injuries to staff, or is it staff and patients?
That's to staff.
And the injuries that occurred, are these injuries that have occurred to staff by reason of your concern with sight lines and so forth? I mean, are these attacks that are occurring by patients on staff, or is it, some other kind of a more innocuous injury,
yep,
say a slip and fall or something like that.
So the workers' comp injuries, injuries that cost us money, so the 100, about 50% to 60% of them are patients' assaults of staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay.
Thank you very much. Any other questions that committee members have?
Senator Stump.
Senator Sharon.
I think that Senator Newman and others might be very interested in the reports that have been presented, not only on staff injury, but a number of other issues related to escalating violence and the needed use of seclusion and restraint and other forms of intervention that we are analyzing. We're doing a systems analysis to determine, you know, the question, is there a direct relationship between the failure of sight lines and these outcomes? I don't think we're going to be able to say all of this is related to that, but we have an idea of a variety of contributing factors. One of them is this, and there'll be a series of recommended interventions to take these markers that we are looking at, injury, workman's compensation, missed work time, patient seclusion and restraint, injury to patients, which are outcomes that we're trying to get. And we have graphs. I'd like this committee to see them because it's very related to the request in front of you that shows that these have been escalating. Just the discussion here about a crisis center, you know, the highly acute and crisis center, you know, doing the analysis in the system of where are these, who is creating the aggressive behavior that results in injury. If we are able to create an environment where it's the intake, where the person's the least controlled, are separated out from the other population, which is part of this plan, and we can hire staff, we can have a higher staff ratio there, we can reduce the amount of injury by increasing the security of the system. So those, your questions are right on. It's not just last year, you know, Carol's talking about just last year. We can show you how this has been increasing over the years. And we have graphs that the department has been tracking that can show you that. And the auditor's report, the state operated services report, shows a number of these. And I'll make sure that you have a copy of that.
Yep.
State operated services is the mentally ill and dangerous. Not the sex offenders. We're talking about the mentally ill and dangerous, which is what this improvement is about.
I understand that.
Senator,
thank you, Mr.
Sharon, Chairman. If you could share those with us, we can get those out to all of the members of the committee. Senator Newman?
Yeah, that would be very helpful because I look at that at this in it, and there's a request for, you know, almost $100 million in bonding, and the first question that comes to my mind is based on what? Obviously, Senator Sharon, you have a good deal of information that supports this request, and I would be very interested in seeing it. And I thank you for bringing that up.
Do you know exactly when the St. Peter Hospital was built? What was the year?
1982. I think we occupied the new security hospital in 1983.
I just share with committee members there, and I'm sure this was a much older hospital, but there is a little hospital in Hallock, Minnesota, and we got some federal money to do some remodeling. And before the doorways were, I think, about 24-inch doorways. So when I'd go through the doorway, I could almost, my shoulders would rub on both sides of the door. And I thought to myself, gosh, you know, people must have been a lot smaller, you know, back in the turn of the century than we were. You could never get a wheelchair through it or anything. This is to get into the bathroom, you know. But all the doors were about that size. And so I think the age of buildings has changed along. I mean, not the age, but the design of buildings has changed immensely over the years from what people used to build before, and now we're bigger people, and we need to have some different styles of buildings. So,
Any other questions that members have? And do you have anything else that you'd like to?
Mr. Chair, I think I have a number of summary slides, but I think we pretty much covered that information. I think the one thing perhaps I haven't mentioned is that if we're able to move on this plan with the security hospital, that we estimate that it would be done with the construction in January of 2016. So that's kind of the target for when we'd be able to have the security hospital piece done, have everybody up in the upper campus and have the lower campus cleared out.
One question, going back actually I think to page 2 where built into the request was the pre-design and design for the next year's request. Is that true with the sex offenders program request as well as the security hospital request?
Mr. Chair, I believe that for the sex offender request, the 1.7 that's being asked for this year is the money that's needed for the next two phases. I'll confirm that.
Okay, thank you.
That's correct.
All right. So,
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Commissioner.
May I make one just additional comment that addresses a couple of the questions, if I may, Mr. Chair?
Sure.
And that is the reasons we're bringing this forward and what are the benefits. And I think that Senator Sharon and others have explained very well the patient safety concerns, both for patients and for our employee safety, and how the building certainly doesn't cause all of those but contributes to that, and we think it's part of the solution. But I think that there's another part as well, in addition to separating the sex offender program, and that is really we believe that with the changes in security hospital, people will be able to progress through treatment faster than they do today. And it's hard to put an exact number on that. Is it on average, as Mr. Johnson said, people stay at security hospital for about 8 years. But we think by the reconfigurations that we're doing that we can bring those lengths of stays down by separating out the acute patients and the patients that are in crisis in their own areas and have people kind of move through in a better, quicker way when they're with people who are in their same stage of treatment. So we do think that there are also going to be both better for patients to be through our system a little faster and also saving the state those dollars as well.
Great. That's always good. Thank you. Any other questions, members?
Chair, just as long as we have her. I'm just sitting here thinking This whole issue about especially the sex offenders and, if you will, what do we do with them? We seem never to be able to let any out except for one, I guess. But the question really is, do other states, as you know them or may know them through meetings around the country, do they face this same issue?
That's a good question. Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Senator Simjim. Other states face this issue, but not as acutely as Minnesota does. I think we have the highest rate of civilly committed sex offender per citizen. That rate is much higher than other states. So we face this more directly, both in terms of cost and of just these challenges to our system than other states. I think looking at what other states have done, and I think some of that work has informed the task force's work and Senator Sharon's work on her bill, is how are other states who have civil commitment for sex offenders, because not every state does, how have they looked at other options? For an example, I think some of the proposals in Senator Sharon's bill kind of come from our looking at New York, and how they have more than just this one-size-fits-all approach we have here. They've developed these kind of secure, intensive supervision models. It's not just sending someone in the community. There's still security. There's treatment. But it's in a less expensive and, you know, a little more integrated system. We've looked at what Texas does with kind of halfway houses. So that there are other models. So yes, we've looked at what other states do. I think we face this in a bigger way than most of these problems more acutely, but there are other options, and that's what we're trying to explore.
Thank you. And I just say, Mr. Chair.
Senator Sinjum.
I kind of like what you said. It just seemed, you know, we've all been to St. Peter, and it's quite quaint, and you kind of drive up the road, and it's all, but it's nestled away in there, and, you know, so put anybody in there for 8 or 10 or 15 or 20 years and then have a release day and expect them to go into Rochester or Mankato or Litchfield or wherever and be normal. I'm not sure you could. Seems like we ought to have some transition.
One final question then would be, if the suggestions come back in let's say next year for the legislative session, and if they have recommendations to make major changes in the approach to releasing or dealing with the sex offender population, what is your kind of a release valve in terms of the sex offender facilities? Is that, would it be the same as we have before us, or would that schedule change somewhat? Mr. Johnson?
Sure. Mr. Chair, I think it's – I'm not sure that we know exactly how it might change in advance of knowing exactly what that would look like. What we would have after the first phase is the 30 beds in Green Acres. We would be prepared after phase one to start renovation in Bartlett Hall because we would have moved a bunch of those folks out up to the upper campus. And so that would be one decision point there. It would be, you know, the half of Bartlett Hall that has been cleared out. Is that a point at which we would start renovation to make it appropriate for the Minnesota Sex Offender Program or not? And then in phase after phase two, when we've completely vacated Bartlett, that would be another decision essentially on the other half of Bartlett as to whether we make that. And then similarly with Sunrise, where I think we're scheduling Sunrise into the second phase, so that would be something that would come in that second phase decision point. But it depends on what our population trend line looks like. And even if alternatives are put in place or changes are made in the law, they may take some time to play out in terms of bringing that number down from the 55 we're getting now to maybe 50 and then maybe 40, and then we're getting to a point where we're getting to more leveling off or more people are able to be placed into the community out the back door. All those pieces have to be looked at and examined to figure out what the need is for space within the secure program that we're running now.
Okay. And is the schedule that you have on page 24 and 25 still relevant or on track?
Mr. Chair, that's our current schedule based on the notion that we would have a decision in May on the funding request in front of you now.
All right. I guess at least from my perspective and the committee's perspective, I want to thank both Commissioner and Mr. Johnson and others that have shared information. It is a complex and a big part of our responsibility here, and we'd like to be do the right thing. So thank you very much for all the information that you've brought.
Thank you for the time, Mr. Chair.
Any final comments? We won't meet tomorrow, and we'll have to reschedule the corrections piece for next week. That's another fairly big piece, but I'm glad we had your information, and I'm sure that that'll help fill out the picture a little bit, at least for next year.
Yes, thank you, Senator Stem. But we do have a bill that is progressing for this year that addresses some of the elements of the court's recommended changes that the task force has been working on related to developing, having the commissioner go further than you already have in terms of trying to find out what could we create that are alternatives, still very secure, very treatment-oriented, but outside of the kind of perimeter concept that's at Moose Lake at St. Peter. And so we have a bill that's instructing the commissioner to proceed with trying to find the gaps and figure out how we might either through private contracts, you know, fill in that gap. And also in that bill is language for how to
through the court system, complete the assessment processes more frequently, so that we're able to demonstrate that there is a review process going on. So, this, and I'm talking about the sex offenders now. There's also language. People get mixed up because we talk about the civil commitment process and the difficulties in it for the mentally ill and dangerous. So I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself, but I find that I have to separate that out for people, that we're talking about two very separate and very distinct populations that we're treating in very different ways through the civil commitment process. There are problems in both of them. But the bill that we're pursuing because of the court proceedings is related only to the sex offenders. And we're hoping that you'll be able to see something this year, because we want to communicate to the court that we've taken them seriously, that we're about doing something that makes what we're doing under civil commitment not disrupt the civil rights of people. And I'm hoping we're able to do that this year, a portion of what it is that's being requested, with more to come in the future.
Well, I appreciate the committee's interest and time, so thank you very much.